Fife fans, welcome back to Scotland's premier Fife based podcast, Fife Club, where a few friends chat about anything and everything that has taken their interest, putting their world to rights. What's the first rule of Fife Club?
Suppose you can talk about it if you can be fucked. Yeah. Not sure we can be fucked tonight, but
SMS about it if you're down with the kids.
ladies and gentlemen, the Fife Club marketing team.
I would prefer it if you MSN Messenger does it. That would.
I'll get you on my Yahoo group.
Yahoo Club, mate.
Oh, Yahoo Club. Sorry.
Do
we
still do Yahoo?
On my GeoCities page.
On your GeoCities.
I never had a GeoCities page. What was that?
It was. I was like one of the first like
build
hosters,
your own
website sort of thing.
Okay, right.
And it was just full of like horrid GIFs and
yeah.
Just flashing things and things coming in from the right. You know, like when somebody first gets their hands on PowerPoint.
Yeah.
Kind of like that. With some shitty MIDI playing in the background and yeah.
We should make a Fife Club GeoCities site.
Oh, we should make like an HTML, like purely HTML Fife Club site. That'd be quite funny.
Have it old school. I'm pretty sure there's a generator that turns your website into that.
And just for shits, have a bits with like quote in brackets where it's not worked. Or like image in brackets / image where it's not worked. Where
you fucked up your directory
block of text.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah.
Oh, that would be good. So talk about it. I'm here today. I've not written anything, so you know.
Cutch is looking very tired today.
It's been a difficult week.
Yeah.
But
on the plus side, silent producer Kirsty put on a very impressive spread of cake for us this evening.
Yeah. All the knockdown stuff from Asda.
Silent producer Kirsty came back with an epic 10 pence bakery haul from Asda. There were. There was cake, there was cherry pie.
A personal favourite of mine in the reduced section, because nobody likes cherry pie, but they keep making it, and I keep getting it for fuck all.
Cutch has got a couple of pastries sitting, awaiting them in the corner over there.
And Jamie brought us a bit of chocolate cake.
Jamie brought us chocolate cake as well. And we're all loving it, tucking into it, whilst Jamie can't eat any of it because of his new special diet regime, which he's starving himself of an evening. So
I'm not even hungry. That's it.
You are secretly. Whilst we're like stuck
I'm not,
stuff
I'm
in our
genuinely
face.
Not. I'm
chocolate
like,
cake.
I've already had some chocolate cake.
Listeners, when there's silence, just listen. You'll hear his inner thoughts. Chocolate cake.
I've already had some. It's been
so, if you can't tell, I'm here. Yeah, you know, Kutch. And we've got Jamie.
Hello.
And Mags.
Hello.
Yeah,
he's not even bothered doing introductions for us, but whatever. It's fine.
So,
are you trying to make your voice sound bassy as possible there? After we said it consisted purely of high.
I am. Because Kutch, this is the first time I've done a podcast with Kutch's new mixing desk, and Jamie said that he was going to take out all the high pits from my voice so you couldn't hear me. So now I've got to talk really deep.
Why
you can't wipe me out of the
why is your deep voice also posh?
I don't know.
It's really weird. It's fucking weird.
If I put on any kind of voice, it's posh. Like, I can't do any voice other than a posh voice. Like,
Indian. Go Indian.
No, because if I do an Indian voice, that's going to resurface in like 15 years' time when I'm in a high-profile job. Just
say you were
me doing a racist Indian voice.
Just
no context.
Just say you were doing Welsh. We sound the same.
Well, I could sort of do Welsh, but
see, it sounds pretty much Indian. It really does.
It's not that far away. So now that we've done the potentially borderline racist part of the podcast.
Yeah. I've got, should we talk about the, just quickly at the introduction, very important, like, breaking Fife news. Today, was it? Did it come out today? This was it yesterday? But anyway, it's a couple of days before the podcast. Have you heard the very exciting breaking West Fife sports news?
No.
Came out today. Kelty Hearts.
Oh, it did, yes, actually.
Kelty Hearts appointed Barry Ferguson as their new manager.
Really?
Mm. Yes. Mm. Ex-Scot, ex-Rangers and Scotland star?
That's someone whose name I know in football, so he must be big.
Yeah, yeah. Going to Kelty Hearts, which, so I heard a few days ago that he was linked to the job. So Kelty Hearts are in, is it the first season now? Mm-hmm. In the Lowland League, which is the league through which potentially they could end up in the Scottish League. So the Willens of the Lowland League play the winners of the Highland League, and then the winners of that play in the playoffs, and they can potentially get through. And they have said, you know, that they're working towards getting promoted to the actual league, which would be fantastic for the area. They built, and I don't know where their money's come from.
No, because they've got
someone
must have an investor
money recently because they've also just built a new stand, so it's like. It's like a 6,000-seater stadium. Yeah. Well, so it's a 6,000-capacity stadium. Sorry, it's got a wee stand. It holds a couple of thousand in it. Yeah. They're totally prepared.
That's not
and
bad.
And now they've signed Barry Ferguson. Barry Ferguson will not be doing that for nothing.
No. Like, there must be a wee injection of cash coming from somewhere, like a benefactor. For a club like that, yeah.
It's not just a fencing or a tarmacking company.
Yeah.
Someone else has got, they've got some making, someone's making some money in Kelty.
And Barry Ferguson will be like kind of... He'll have his nose in everywhere for like upcoming players who will be not amazing, but okay.
Yeah.
And might want a wee season when they're really young at Kelty Hearts. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I think you're overestimating.
Am I going over top?
I think you're overestimating how connected Barry Ferguson is in football these days.
And I don't know anything about football.
His last job was Clyde FC, and I think he got sacked because they were doing two. They were he could have
Clyde FC.
Clyde
ran by Clyde FM.
So what I do love about this, though, Mark pointed this out on Twitter. So after Barry Ferguson got sacked from Clyde FC, well, this is basically for the last like 4 years, anytime there's been like a Premiership job available in England, like loads of Rangers fans would be like, Barry Ferguson should do it. Barry Ferguson should do it. Barry Ferguson could do that. Barnsley, Barry Ferguson could do that. So now he's kind of found his level, like Kelty Hearts.
Well, on that note, I'd like to give another Fife shout out, sporting wise, to Fife Flyers.
Oh, yeah.
Who this season
are on fire.
On fire.
Fire Fife Flyer.
They have. They've beaten.
Fly, my Fife Flyer beauties.
Won, I think, all of our games so far. They beat Steelers last week or week before, and they just beat Steelers at Steelers home again this week. And Steelers are a pretty big team.
Yeah. I guess. Like,
Sheffield.
Guess. Oh, I was going to say
that. Sorry. Were you going to get? Oh,
I was going to guess Sheffield, but I was right, so it's fine.
It's okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, Steelers are pretty big. They produce top good players. They produce players who I think went to play for, like, the second league in Canada and stuff, you know. Really good. And last time I looked, they were third overall. They might even be second now. I don't know.
How many are in their league? Is it a big league?
EIHL.
What's the conference?
Well, it's not the whole of Britain. It's like there's other lower teams.
I never remember.
But they have to be pretty shit not to be in EIHL. The standard of playing EIHL goes between like
amazing
to absolutely farcical at points, but it's like there's moments of brilliance that make it worth it, and it's also just really fun, but there is some absolutely farcical plays, really bad.
Good old Elite League game.
Yeah.
Nottingham Panthers are top, Fife Flyers second. There is 12.
Done them.
Yeah.
Although Steelers are the bottom of the table, so.
Are they?
Yeah.
They've not been as good for the last few years. Panthers are the Panthers are really good.
I totally forgot that Brayhead clan are now the Glasgow clan. Renamed.
It does make sense, but I also think for a bit of shit for renaming.
Do they still play at Brayhead?
Yeah.
But they should.
But the thing is, like, if you're playing in a national league, nobody.
Well, that's the thing, is that it's all like Nottingham, Fife, Belfast, Cardiff.
They'd be like, we're the West Coast team, but everybody just thought of them as sort of Glasgow anyway.
Yeah. And if you're playing in like, folk in Scotland know where Brayhead is. Folk in Central Scotland have been shopping or to the snow thing at some point. So they know where Brayhead is. But Brayhead's only really the shopping centre.
Yeah.
And other people won't know where it is. So you might as well be Glasgow.
Yeah.
And obviously Glasgow clan are fucking scumbags.
Scum. It's also sad to see that Edinburgh Capitals folded and are no longer playing.
Yeah.
I mean, they were a stalwart of the Elite League and the Scottish League and whatever other leagues there were.
A crap name,
that.
Though, isn't it? Edinburgh
Capital. They used to be called my dad's uncle or something used to play for the Edinburgh Royals.
The Royals,
which was their old name back in the day.
There's a thing
I think that's even worse.
There's a thing
Edinburgh
with
Republicans. would be better.
There's a thing with the Scottish teams, or
it's all Hearts
them, apart from the clan, is that you've got Fife Flyers, which is kind of like the Philly Flyers in the States. Okay. You've got the Dundee Stars, who are like the Dallas Stars. And then you had Edinburgh Capitals, and like the symbols were all very similar to the teams in the States as well. Edinburgh Capitals, Washington Capitals, NHL teams. So there's a
but the Flyers are older than a fair few NHL franchises as well.
Not the original six.
Not the original six, but a lot of the others.
A lot of them, because they're coming up for about 100-year-old, are they not?
Yeah, was it 30? 38, something like that.
They're an old team. They're one of the oldest in the UK, if not the oldest.
They are the oldest.
Yeah.
I think they're the oldest. They might be the oldest continuous one in the world, actually. I think. Might be wrong. UK. It's Maple Leafs. It must be UK.
Maple Leafs and the Bruins and...
Yeah, it must be UK. And they'll have ones in Sweden and stuff that are older. Yeah.
Edinburgh Penguins. That's what I'd go for. If I was naming them,
and then you could
make your outfit like penguin.
You could.
And you could have like a little hat on.
What's
with, like,
the lower team at Fife again? The younger team.
The young team. I've forgotten her name.
Aye, that's really.
I want to say Falcons, but that's not right, is it? It's
Falcons don't work on ice. This is like I'm trying to racking my brains thinking of things that work on ice. Polar bears, Edinburgh polar bears.
Yeah,
Edinburgh polar bears.
No, but penguins are better. And you could like have a wee funny dance, and you're coming out on the ice, and that. You look a bit like a penguin when you shuffle along on the ice. I think I might write to them with my idea.
It's funny how, like, you know, originally supporting Fife Flyers, like originally went was on like P7 in high school and stuff. Like Flyers went to a Stars game, and I was like, oh yeah, I like the Stars now. As soon as I went back, I was like, the Stars are scum.
Don't support anyone from Dundee, honestly.
But when I was there, I was like, oh yeah, I'll support Stars, yeah.
Dear. Well done to all the Fife sporting greats who are flying in their respective leagues. Why are you laughing? It's a heartfelt wish.
You just tried to fill Kutch Google time. Did you find it, Kutch?
No.
Let's move on.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Right.
So, what else were we going to talk about? Something else.
I have news story this week.
Yeah, Mags has got all our
news
content
story
this
with
week.
A little connected.
Okay.
So, it's one of these stories that's been kind of rumbling for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of undercover policing. I don't know if you've been... So The Guardian have been following this for years, and they did the original investigation, which this policeman, Mark...
Something like that. Mark, I can see his face. Yeah. It's like a ponytail.
So they did some undercover investigation into one particular officer, and it turned out that he'd not just had relationships with women.
Yeah, I'd seen that story. I didn't realise it was... That was related to the bigger story.
Right. So it started out. So there was this policeman who turned out that he'd been infiltrating. It was his job. He'd been infiltrating primarily environmental activist groups, and having relationships with women. And he'd actually had kids with one of the women. He'd had multiple relationships over time, but he'd had children with one woman. And this story broke, and the women got together and sued him, basically. Sued him or sued the police or whatever, but said that their human rights had been violated. Because they'd been lied to and they'd been coerced to give information over whilst in these relationships and things. So this was about 10 years ago this story first broke, but it's been boiling on since then. In England, they've then started in a is it a parliamentary inquiry or a public inquiry? I'm not quite sure, but they've done a, they've started a formal inquiry into undercover policing and the techniques that have been used. And there's now calls for the same thing to happen in Scotland because it's different. It's, you know, with Scottish law, inquiries to do with law only focus on England and Wales. Mm. We need to do a separate one in Scotland. There's moves in the parliament to make it happen. So, yeah, it's kind of all coming to a fore, just the extent to which undercover policing has been used and the tactics, particularly targeting women and arguably targeting vulnerable women to try and get them to give information. It's pretty despicable and it's been really widespread. Anyway, this week, there's been a website called undercoverresearch.net who've been working in partnership with The Guardian, and they've published a database of all the groups that they've found so far that had undercover cops infiltrating them between 1968 and 2011.
Wow. That's all massive period.
It's a long period
of
time, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so at the moment there's what, I know there was about, I'm trying to remember, I think there was 217 groups listed on it at the moment. And that's all that they found, and they know that there'll be more. So they're kind of, the idea is they're going to keep adding to it. So if you go to undercoverresearch.net, you can flick through them all. But I've done that for you because there were some quite interesting names on that website. So as a fun game, we're now going to play guess who had an undercover cop infiltrating them. And guess who didn't?
Insert game show music. I meant in the edit, but you can do it now. It's fine.
I need a better name. I should have thought a better name for my game. Whose spy is it anyway?
Yeah, that's good.
That's quite good, yeah.
Yes,
that's
pretty good. Whose spy is it anyway?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, they call it on the website, they call them spy cops.
Spy cops.
Spy cops.
That sounds like some terrible you'd see on Channel 5 at like midnight.
Yeah. or kids' TV franchise to try and normalise undercover policing in our under 10s.
Yep.
Okay, right. So, do you think this group was spied on or not? Here we go. We'll start with action to abolish the Grand National. I should point out, some of them I've just totally made up.
Okay.
Some of them will be real groups who weren't spied on, and some of them will be real groups who were spied on.
Okay. I'm going to say for that one, true. Because there's always every year, I don't know what the group's called, but there's a lot of campaign about the Grand National, about horses getting shot and all
Greenpeace.
You're right. Yeah. So, yeah. Action to abolish the Grand National. Where
nice catchy name that.
Yeah. We're spied on in the early 90s. Oh, I should say that every group was given a classification as to why they were spied on. They were just because it was animal rights. Apparently, didn't really have to have. The classifications were animal rights, left wing. That in itself was a classification. And just like not come across anything yet that's just right wing. Nothing yet that's right wing.
You know, the ones that actually shoot MPs and run over Muslims and all that shit.
No. Yeah.
I've been a member of left wing groups, and there is a bit of like, there's always a bit of like a paranoia about take this person's a cop. But the thing is they know like they will be getting spied on and stuff. Mm. And you just sort of accept it and go. And so most of them have either, because the thing is, if you have a secret email chain, if you have spies in your group, it doesn't matter. So instead what people have done is just made most things incredibly public or organized things at the last minute. Those are two tactics around it. For any listeners, one, two, do left-wing organizations in five.
Wait a minute.
I'm not a cop. I'm totally not a cop.
Wait a minute.
I'm not a cop trying to maintain his cover by telling you how to spot cops.
Okay, so yeah, so the different classifications that this website has given was left-wing groups, anarchist, Jamie's not doing well here, environmental, and animal welfare.
Yeah.
So I think that was pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
So right.
Not fucking Nazis.
No.
No right wing, no Nazis.
I don't remember seeing any right wing Nazi groups on it, actually.
Yeah.
See, I don't know how. Well, they've published it. So they've obviously published all the information they have. Yeah. Just now.
Which is almost like the police have an operational right wing bent or something. I don't know.
Or maybe they don't need to infiltrate them because they're like openly members of these groups.
They know them all through the Masons.
Oh dear. Right, okay, another group. The Faslane Peace Camp.
Oh, that's real.
Yeah, that's real.
So were they infiltrated?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I thought it was just a name we were guessing. No. Were they infiltrated?
Yeah, no, no. So
Fastlane
this
Peace Camp,
just,
I would definitely, have said yes. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, we're Fastlane. No, not on the list.
What?
No.
Nope.
The CND, the overall CND were on mm-hmm. this, but there were a couple of other peace camps named, like the Greenham Common Women's Peace Camp, that was infiltrated in the 80s, but Fastlane Peace Camp, not on the list.
Woman from my course lives there now. I saw her in the news. I went, oh, hello. But I'm really surprised. That's at a naval base and everything.
I know. Yeah. But perhaps you don't need to, because again, it's all publicly in the open. You can just sit and watch
that's
them.
True.
Just
that's
the
true.
The
yeah.
So, they've been there also, been there for about 30 years now. So if they were going to do something massive, they would have probably done it by now.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Just a quick update. I finally found it. It's the Kestrels.
The Kestrels. Kestrels. I knew it was the Falcons or something.
What's Kestrels got to do with ice? That's a stupid name. I'm telling you, penguins. Five penguins is what they should be called.
Right.
Okay, right.
We'll send that to them. Okay.
The National Union of Journalists. Do you think that they would
National
have been infiltrated?
Union of Journalists.
Oh.
The NUG.
Yeah, they're quite powerful, but I'm going to say no, because I think they'd go more for, like...
Probably because they're quite, well, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to say no.
What are you going for, Kutch? Bearing in mind, this is just a quick fire
no.
game.
We've got to pad this episode out somehow.
Okay, so you're both right. The NUG was not infiltrated.
That's because they're too powerful.
Here are some of the unions that were infiltrated. I have to say, this is what shocked me the most. The amount of unions unions are a really important part of our democracy, and they were being infiltrated by undercover cops. The Communication Workers Union, the Fire Brigades Union, the National Union of Students, the National Union of Teachers, and fucking Unison.
Unison.
They infiltrated Unison.
Do you know why? It's because they're the ones who, if they wanted to, could call a general strike. The ones with enough members in the right places to do a general strike that'll actually matter.
Yeah. But the Fire Brigades Union, though. Like,
yeah.
Well, honestly, that really shocked me. It's your total right. You know, as a responsible citizen, you should be joining unions, says someone who's not a union member.
Somebody that could join a union, but it wouldn't make a jot's difference.
Well,
anyway.
But yeah, so there was lots of unions that were spied on, but not the NUG, interestingly enough. Right. The Spartacist League of Britain. Are they a real group?
Right.
And were they infiltrated?
Right. This is so ridiculous. I can't decide if you've made it up or if it's real.
Because you did have them in Germany, but it also sounds like something from Monty Python. I'm going to say yes, because there was a left-wing group called something like that in like the 70s.
You are right! Spartacist League of Britain is a left-wing group that was infiltrated in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, you fucking go.
Yeah.
I'm a sado I'm a sado who reads left-wing journals from like the 70s and 80s in his spare time by groups like this. Yeah.
There is a fabulous bit of the list. So this list, as I say, is like 217 that goes on across these pages, and at one point it gets very People's Front of Judea. Particularly around about, it's all alphabetical order, so around about R, you get the Revolutionary Socialist Party, the Revolutionary International Socialists, the Revolutionary People's Socialists of Great Britain. So honestly, it is really funny. It's worth a look through.
Did you know if well, doesn't matter, I'll look up there.
Scots Against Superdrug.
That has to be fake, surely.
Not real.
I did make up Scots Against Superdrug. However, there was a group called the London Boots Action Group, and it is Boots as in the chemist, who were an anti-vivisection group who were infiltrated in the early 90s. I can only assume they would go to Boots and just smash everything up. It sounds quite fun.
That'd be fucking great, actually.
Yeah, London Boots Action Women.
Does Boots still exist?
Yeah, Boots still exists.
Yeah, just but not in Dunfermline.
I feel like we should start.
Oh, is it in the Kingsgate
it's
now?
In the Kingsgate.
I always forget about it. Yeah.
I feel like we should start Scots Against Superdrug, though, and we just go in and smash all the stuff that's been tested on animals. Tell you animals.
And then take for lollies.
Do you know what? See, with chat like that, I've got a funny feeling there'll be a new member to Fife Club next week.
We're going to get like a special visit. Yeah. Okay, right. There's a couple more. The campaign for Jean-Charles de Menezes.
Are we saying, is that real or did they infiltrate?
Is it real? And this is all the whole thing. I might have made it up.
That's real.
It might be real.
That'll be real.
It might have been infiltrated.
I'm pretty sure they did infiltrate them.
I would say yeah as well.
I remember because there was a story about that at the time.
Yeah.
Or just a couple of years after it.
Yeah. It was an action group to try and get justice for his family for his family, what happened.
It was brought up at the inquiry. It was brought up that, yeah.
Anyway, right.
Disgusting.
Yeah. Right, last one. The Uist Hedgehog Rescue.
I'm going to say real because that was a thing.
Real, but not infiltrated.
Possibly infiltrated.
And they were infiltrated.
What? That was a huge thing at the time.
I'm going to be honest. Basically, this entire segment was a way for me to squeeze the potential rescue into conversation. They were infiltrated in the late 2000s.
Yep.
When I saw this, this is how I know about this. My friend flagged it up to him and was like, oh, it was Hedgehog Rescue in a bit.
Well, it's because there was a massive cull.
Yeah, so it was really
because
controversial.
Because they were an invasive species and they were causing massive problems to the bird population because they were just eating eggs.
Yeah. So they did a cull in the late 2000s, but Uist Hedgehog Rescue were militantly against the cull.
Yep.
And I can only assume we're going out and sabotaging traps and things. However, I also do not think it is irrelevant that there is still a large proportion of South Uist and Bimbicular are owned by the MOD. And I strongly suspect that it was nothing to do with the hedgehogs. They were concerned about Uist Hedgehog Rescue probably trespassing on MOD land or doing damage to MOD land. And that's probably where their real concern was. Mm. So there you go. So we need to get our Western Isles correspondent, Lizzie, to find, see if she knows of any people who were members of the Uist Hedgehog Rescue in the mid-2000s. Mm. And we could do an interview on them sometime.
Maybe we should get her
to infiltrate. We can't have terrorists on the podcast.
See, maybe we should get her to infiltrate the group.
Well, I think they've been disbanded. I tried to look on their website and their website doesn't work.
That's what they want you to think.
I think that's because there's now no hedgehogs on Uist. I'm pretty sure they managed to wipe them out.
Just be smuggling them back
wipe
on
them
again.
Out. Yeah. All of them.
They could.
Then it'll be the trees and the bees, just like Shetland.
What's the bees? They've not got bees.
They do have bees on Shetland, but there's rumours that they don't. Just
because
like trees.
Of the wind.
We'll probably get blown away. Yeah. There are some trees on Shetland.
That's why there's no trains on Shetland, because of the wind.
I've been to the trees on Shetland, and everybody calls them the trees. It's one little patch of trees in the middle of the mainland. And like we were out one day.
It's got to be like right bang in the centre, isn't it? Where the winds cross. So
I'm
there's
fairly,
a perfect little eye in the middle.
I'm fairly certain that in ancient times it did have trees on it and humans came and cleared them off.
Probably.
And then they
I'm pretty sure I learned that when looking at like Shetland and Orkney.
You do see them in people's gardens, but they're they're small and they're stunted. And the thing is, it's all like it's all just open grazing for sheep and stuff, so you don't get trees grown on that land anyway. But no, I did go out. So for listeners who don't know, my other half is from Shetland and we were visiting his parents, and the first time I'd ever been up, and we'd been out for a day out. And we were driving back to the house, and his mum said, "Oh, we need to take Mags to show her the trees." Like, yeah, we should go see the trees. I'm like, okay, we'll go see the trees. And I totally thought they were taking the piss, and they weren't. We took a detour back to the house, and it's just literally like about six trees. And that was it.
It's the woods.
It's the cutest thing ever, honestly. So yeah, if you're going to Shetland, make sure you go and see the trees.
So can your other half like climb a tree, or is this like some kind of terrifying proposition?
That's a good point.
He's quite tall, so I'm pretty sure he'd figure it out.
but he might be scared to because he's never.
That's a good point.
He did tell me that he gets annoyed because I tell this to everybody. But he did admit once that whenever they went on a school trip, so they got to go on quite good school trips because the schools are all quite well funded up there, lots of oil money and stuff like that. So they used to get to go down to Edinburgh and they got all of this. One of their school trips, they took the children from Shetland who most of them probably actual Vikings with Viking blood in them, to the Jorvik Viking Centre in York.
Oh.
All the way to York to go and see people dressed up as Vikings. So, love that.
I have a story about the Jorvik Viking. I might have told it on podcast before, but basically my cousin Gail was getting married in Barbados. Mm-hmm. But me and my little brother were very young at the time, very ginger. And it was a mix of, you can't go to Barbados because you'll actually, in the middle of a summer, because you'll die, / we can't afford to take you to Barbados. So we took my sister to Barbados and we went to stay with my auntie in Yorkshire. And we went to the Jorvik Centre while they were in Barbados. And this always brought up quite a lot. And mum was like, you had a great time.
Your childhood was great.
Yeah. It's like, yeah whatever, mum.
My sister's was better.
Yeah. Sister got to go to Barbados and be a bridesmaid. I wanted to be a bridesmaid in Barbados.
There's no Vikings in Barbados, though.
Fake Vikings in Barbados.
Yeah. No, the other thing I was going to say that the kids from Shetland used to do when they went on school trips, went to Aberdeen, the first thing they do would be go to the shopping centre and play on the escalators. They didn't have escalators. They still don't have escalators in Shetland.
To be fair, that's what everybody used to do in Asda in Aberdeen because it had ones like the Travelator.
Travelators are fun. But,
and then be drunk and run up at singing the Gladiators theme tune. Good times.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Security guards did not like it.
Yeah. No, that's... oh, bless.
Sorry, Craig, for telling everyone your childhood secrets, taking the piss out of you.
It's like the 2001 and the apes and the monolith. It's like Shetlanders and escalators. Yeah.
I've not seen that film, but I think what you just said was probably quite rude and offensive. Shetland culture.
He is comparing them to apes, essentially. Like,
have you heard the hoo ha about the Shetland cookbook?
No.
This is another story. This is brilliant. So, do you remember a few years ago there was a guy from Shetland on Bake Off? Tom Morton, James Morton, and he was the son. It turned out, it didn't tell you all the way through, but at the end, it turned out that he was the son of Tom Morton, who's a former BBC Scotland. He used to have a show in the afternoon to be in Scotland. He did it from Shetland. Uh-huh. Yep. And so they were father son. Anyway, so they just put out a cookbook together, and it's really nice, actually. My mum bought us it, and it's got beautiful photography. And it's called Shetland Cooking on the Edge, and it's all like recipes that they've collected and really beautiful photos and stories about the islands and stuff like that, and it's really nice. But in the fishing bit, honestly, I should have brought it with me to read, because I have to say, they were being very bold in what they wrote. They decided, in the bit about fishing, it's just like a page, but they just totally started laying into the guys who own, and so there's one island in Shetland called Walza, mm-hmm. and the guys on Walza, for some reason, it's called Billionaires Island, mm-hmm. I think it is, and there's a few families on Walza who have the really big, they call them pelagic boats, and they're the really big fishing boats that go out to sea and catch huge amounts of whitefish, and they get their annual quota within a month, and then they come back and just like make an absolute fortune and lay about the islands mm-hmm. and don't do anything. So as you know, Craig's told me this before, when you know, Shetlanders do joke about the guys who are Walza and mm-hmm. making their money and stuff like that. But not, so they wrote about this, but they also commented on the fact that like some of the guys from Walza also got done in like the 90s for blackfish scandal, it's called. So they were catching more fish than they were allowed to have in their quota. And they got fined like millions of pounds, but it didn't put them out of business. They just paid their fine and kept on going because that's how much money they
were making, yeah.
So they wrote a little bit about this in the book, and they actually named one of the families who had this money. Thinking that, you know, and then just went on and started doing like fish recipes and stuff like that. Well, clearly people in Shetland are quite unhappy about this. And in general, the way that Shetlanders have been portrayed in this book. So they started this campaign and like thousands of people have gone onto Amazon, mm-hmm. onto the Amazon and reviewed this as one star. Left it really cutting reviews. So it's like is rated really badly on Amazon now, even though it sold loads of copies and stuff. But some of the reviews, uh-huh. you should do a quick Google catch, because some of the stuff that people have written is really funny. Well,
obviously, that campaign will be infiltrated by the police as well.
God, no, I don't think they can be bothered infiltrating. I think the Wilds and fishermen have got enough money to pay the police off if anyone's ever come looking at them. Also, clearly, the police in Shetland are far too busy catching all the murderers.
Wow, you're putting Shetland and up comes cooking on the edge of the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Honestly, go to the reviews. It's hilarious.
Thing is, it's still like 3.5 stars.
It's a really nice book. I feel a bit sorry, but all.
It's also only had 57 reviews as well.
Oh, has it? Yeah. Oh, well. Maybe it's not. I mean, this made the papers and everything. And Craig's parents phoned us up the other day, and it was the first thing
so
he mentioned.
54% 5 star, then it's like 3, 2, 2, 4, 3, 2, 39% 1 star. Let's have a wee look at 1 star reviews. I'm better than everyone else because I've been on TV. Terrible. Not worth the paper. Mediocre. Yawn. Barely a speck of truth in the book. It's in the bin. Recipes are not like anything I've had in Shetland. 1 star is too much. Read more like a fiction novel than a cooking book. I wouldn't mind as much if the recipes were good. Nothing remotely Shetland about this book. Save your monies, folk. I wouldn't recommend it. Not the best book. Poor.
To the point.
Disgraceful and inaccurate. The portrayal of the island and the people who live there is disgraceful, completely not true, and terrible representation of the community. The author's personal opinion should not have been published unnecessarily in the cookbook. Shocked and will be sending it back. Not worth a penny.
Like they've actually bought it. Like they clearly haven't.
Oh, wow. An upsetting read. I purchased this book to relive my fond memories of my summer in Shetland. As I read it, my heart jumped with excitement at the thought of creating these culinary pieces. So you can imagine my horror when I started to read the slander written about the lovely people of Shetland. I've since been haunted by these words. Was I deceived? Were the people I met on my travels really these crooks? How could I have been so manipulated? The answer was, I was not. These are lies created by Mr. James Morton. Clearly these comments are spawned from some personal vendetta against the people of Shetland. What should have been a lovely book about the amazing island he was from has turned into a hate crime that I hope James will regret for the rest of his life. 1 star. Kiss, kiss, kiss.
Ah, it's the kiss, kiss, kiss that sells it.
Oh, God. A hate crime against the billionaire fisherman of Walza.
Right, give us one more, Kutch.
Book of lies. No doubt the recipes are good. It's like, no doubt the recipes are good. But it was a very unfortunate to find a page dedicated to lies with a purpose to debate probably the most successful and productive community in Shetland as evil millionaire fishermen with an agenda to rape the seas and lead lives as crooked businessmen who abuse drugs. Not only was the page filled with lies and figures so inaccurate, I couldn't help but laugh to myself at how ridiculous and pathetic it was to have a page like this in what would appear to have been a very unique and useful cookbook. I think if people like yourselves were to ignore the tabloids, such as the Daily Star or the Sun, and do some proper research into not just the lives of fishermen, but perhaps the many decades of struggle and perseverance these men had to go through to reach the position they are now in. It's a shame that a cookery book has to be plagued with such unnecessary and far-fetched poems and stories of pure jealousy to other people's hard-working success stories.
Wow. Oh
my God, they all go on like that.
That sounds like a Fife Club review.
Yeah.
There's just wasted potential. Don't believe a word he says. You know, just don't buy. Bad. Oh dear, why ruin a social cookery book with untrue negative comments about Shetland? Do not buy. Take up another hobby. And just go on and on and on. Wow. Yeah. Those are good. Yeah. That is a community spurned.
Exactly, yeah. The great divide, the great Shetland cookbook divide of 2018 will go down in legend.
Oh, this is the second week we've had Shetland as a topic.
Yeah, fucking hell.
Oh my God. How's Craig feeling about the whole Shetland in a box thing?
Shetland? Oh! Yeah. So the Shetland in a box thing was a story, as far as I said, about 6 months ago. It's just kind of come back into the news again because it's actually been activated.
Yeah, because it's been thingied.
Because the law actually came into place. He's for it. He's mostly for it, definitely. Yeah.
He likes seeing ridiculously large maps or masses of North Sea.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's just like waste loads of paper with this huge swathe of blue water on it. The thing about the Shetland in a box clause actually is that there is a get out clause in it. Mm. If you can argue that it's a that it distorts the information or it distorts the scale or the page too much for it to be practical, that you don't actually have to do it.
So as every test, no one's going to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally. If you can give a good reason, like you cannot, you have to make sure that Shetland's is in its proper position unless you can give a good reason otherwise. So they're still going to be doing it. And it's only official government maps as well, so other organisations can.
Public bodies and that.
There's a really good Facebook group.
So like OS won't be, because OS is like...
OS is actually an independent organisation. It was part of the MOD for quite a long time.
Yeah, but it's not anymore.
Yeah, but it's not. Yeah. It's separate. There is a fabulous Facebook group you can join called Put Shetland on the Map. And it's looking for examples where either Shetland's in the box or it's not there or it's in the wrong place. But in order to join the group, it's not for just random people. You have to answer 5 quite difficult questions about Shetland. So like, I'm a member of it, but I had to, and thankfully I did know.
Let me guess, is one of the answer the trees?
one of them is what was
I hate the cookbook.
That's probably it now. One of them was, what was Shetland's original capital?
No idea.
Well, it's Scalawa, which is where Craig's from. Right. So it's like one of the first. I think he told me that on our first date. When I asked him where it was from, he said Scalawa is the original capital of Shetland. So you know.
And then you go, I'm from Dunfermline,
the original capital of Scotland.
We bonded over being from the proper capital of our respective nations.
The ancient capital. Amazing.
Right. We have one last thing we were going to talk about.
Okay. What was that again? Oh, yeah.
We all had an existential crisis this week when we realised that the first Idlewild album, Hope Is Important, one of my favourite albums of all time, is 20 years old this week.
20 years old.
It came out in 1998, and the beautiful man god that is Roddy Wimble was on Hugh Stevens' show on Six Music talking about it.
Mm.
Which is lovely and all, but I can't believe it's 20 years old.
Do you know what? I actually wasn't into it when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
I was into other stuff at the time. It would have been a couple years later when I would have got into it.
Picked it up, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it is one of those, like, yeah, probably one of the first local bands that kind of...
Mm-hmm.
came into prominence as a local band with an album, and you know, like, yeah, they were on the radio, they were getting played by Lamac, they were getting played by John Peel, they were getting, you know,
I always think of them in the Beta Band, the same two Edinburgh bands, you know,
Ball Boy
as well, yeah.
I got Hope Is Important from Avalanche Records on Coburn Street, and I think I bought a Ball Boy EP the same day as well. And they felt like just little local bands putting these albums out, and then woof.
And then
they went on to be global superstars. I know.
Well, I was going to say Ball Boy never.
Ball Boy never
left Edinburgh.
No.
Gordon McKenzie, was it?
Was Mark not tell me he went on to play with someone else? Or he's still making music, apparently?
Oh, no, I mean, Ball Boy were still doing stuff up until, like, not that terribly long ago. Like, 5 years or so. Because I was following them on Twitter at one point, and they were... They were putting out stuff.
The guy from Beta Band's been putting out solo stuff. I think he might release something this year. Last year it was more electronic, whereas before it's like the sort of stuff you'd expect from lead singer of a Beta Band, you know, bit similar sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know who else, like, on the back of like Idlewild, Ball Boy, was Mull Historical Society as well.
Yeah.
I never liked them. Although I don't think I'd mind them now. Him. But I just was never a fan at the time at all.
I just liked it because we have the link to Mull, and it was really cool because there was this band from this tiny little place, and his first CD had like articles and pictures cut out from the Mull Round and About magazine, which my dad always bought every year when we went to Mull, and we'd sit and read it cover to cover. And
CalMac tickets and all that kind of thing. Yeah,
it was really lovely. It was quite. But I can understand, they were very twee. And appealed to that kind of Scottish local twee, I've been there type thing, and I can understand why you wouldn't get into it.
I don't know, I quite liked them. But in fact, at one point, Mull Historical Society, I think I'd seen them more than any other band.
Really?
It's just because they...
So like, I remember you and used three really liking them. Yeah. But I remember not many of the rest of us I can think of.
He came and played Aberdeen like every other week. So, you know, it was just like, oh yeah, I'll just go and see him.
He played, I remember seeing him and he did a acoustic set in Bean Scene on Ashton Lane.
Wow. In Glasgow.
In Glasgow, yeah. There's a Bean Scene on Ashton Lane, yeah. It was good.
Oh, no, doesn't matter.
It must have been a lie.
It's not a lie, it's just boring and complicated.
All right, fair enough. But yeah, no, so yeah, being 20-year-old, it is, I said earlier on that silent producer Kirsty sent me that about 20 minutes before you did.
Yeah.
And she was just like, hope is important as 20-year-old. And I was just like, yeah, thanks for that. And then 20 minutes later, you're like, hope is important, 20-year-old. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm already living that right now. Thanks.
Existential
crisis. 20 years. Like, when did that moment happen when we can remember 20 years ago, but not just remember it, clearly as part of us growing up?
Yeah. We participated in a cultural moment 20 years ago. Like, we were old enough to go and buy the CD.
How fucking old are we?
Well, do you want to make me feel old by me informing you of some other albums that came out 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay, this is from the NME list of albums of the year. Number one, terrible choice, Mercury Rev, Desert of Songs.
Oh,
fucking
wow.
Hate Mercury Rev.
I thought we were all right.
They're so no, like, shoegazy American nonsense. Anyway. Number two, Hello Nasty.
Oh, that was. Hello Nasty. Fucking hell, that's 20-year-old as
well. Intergalactic came out that year. That was one of the biggest selling singles of the year. Yeah. I know. Now, I have to say, I wasn't into Beastie Boys at the time, but it made me think of my brother. Alec had the Beastie Boys. I think, was he still living at home at that point?
Oh, Hello Nasty was my introduction to the Beastie Boys.
Same here. Same here, yeah.
Like, it was from there, finding things like Paul's
Boutique. I'd heard Fight for Your Right to Party, but, you know. But yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
That's the first album.
Hello Nasty. And then from there, finding Paul's Boutique. And you know what? They are one of those bands that I'm so glad I got to see.
I've still never seen them.
Like, they were just...
Never will.
Because and it was such a great gig because they were so hyped to be playing at the castle. They'd never played at a castle before, and they kept calling.
They got us to chat.
It was something about the Duke. They kept calling the Duke out. It was just like the Duke of Argyll.
We were all going, whose castle?
My castle. Yeah, whose castle?
My castle.
Didn't know the Beastie Boys were into land reform.
It was a total like magic set and just man, the Beastie Boys. But yeah,
fucking love the Beastie Boys. Well, there you go.
20 years ago, fuck.
Max, you flicked past some amazing albums there. Just like to point out.
Wait, well, yeah, you can do it then, Jamie. I feel like I'm just doing all the content this week.
You pretty much are.
I'm going to stop talking for a while.
So, Beck, Mutations.
Oh, that's a good album.
Another classic album.
Yeah.
Air, Moon Safari.
Remember how ubiquitous that was? It was everywhere.
But it's a great album.
Everyone played it. It was on all the adverts.
God, is that old?
Yeah, 20 years. Yeah.
Holy shit.
And then I wondered why people were talking about this week. And it's because it's 20 years old. Massive Attack Mezzanine.
Which is, again...
So for me, that's one of the albums that I didn't really appreciate at the time. But now, looking back on it, I'm like, oh, that was a really good album.
I always appreciate it.
Dissolve Girl. In 1998, I was into Massive Attack.
Dissolve Girl on that. I remember that coming out and like having that album and just being... First experiences of like
trip hop,
and being tripped.
Then we have I wasn't into this at all at the time. Elliot Smith, Either Or, which I really like now.
Nah, I never really listened to Elliot Smith.
Oh, you'd like him. He's really good. Actually, you'd both really like him. But that was one that sort of like flew under radar in the UK, kind of like it's on this NME list.
But
no one really talked about it for a while. And then sort of in the sort of late 2000s, it got really popular again. Pulp, This Is Hardcore.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Not the best Pulp album. It's not different class. Yeah. So.
And then there's Royal Trucks Accelerator.
I don't know who that is. One of those random. I was just saying to this to Jamie earlier that Enemy always suggested looking back on these like best albums of the year thing to see which ones stood the test of time and which ones were totally forgotten about.
Huh. Absolute classic here. Jurassic 5, self-titled.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Fucking classic. And then we have Layla Like Weather.
Nope.
No. Nope. Don't know. And then tons of other. Embrace the Goodwill Out. All right, remember okay. that.
Yeah.
Bell and Sebastian, Boy the Arab Strap.
I was just actually going to say, usually there's a Bell and Sebastian somewhere in these odd 90s. Yeah. But it's the albums that so many people didn't hear but knew the name and the titles.
There was
The Boy in the Arab Strap.
I listened to a really good, had a long car journey. Last week, I listened to a BBC Scotland podcast about... I don't know if they're still online. If they are, I should go back and listen to them. But when the Rip It Up exhibition was on, and they had they had a radio series and a TV series, but they also did a set of podcasts about Scottish albums.
All right.
And each one was like 20, 25 minutes talking about the making of an album. And they did one about The Boy with the Arab Strap. And it was really interesting, actually, because they recorded all the early Bell and Sebastian albums, apparently.
Hmm.
They recorded them in a church hall in the West End, the Glasgow. Like, they didn't use a studio. And so they'd like hire all the equipment and they would literally have like 4 or 5 days because that's all they could afford the equipment for. And also the hall, like there would be like someone's birthday booked or something like that. They had to be out in the church hall and recorded it all in there. And it's worth listening to if it's still on.
I'm just going
to
show another few good albums that are on the list that I've seen. Not good. Baby Bird, there's something going on. Boards of Canada, Music Has a Right to Children. Again, someone who I probably didn't get into until a few years, like 2002, 2003. Yeah, exactly. But then, Arab Strap, Arab Strap. Philophobia, yeah. Fatboy Slim, You've Come a Long Way, Baby.
Oh, wow.
Edward Hope is Important. Manic Street Preachers, This Is My Truth, Tell Me Yours.
That would be
Placebo, Without
it's
You
funny
I'm Nothing.
Though, because like something like This Is My Truth, I Can Believe's 20-year-old.
Totally.
And again with anything Arab Strap, totally.
Yeah.
What was the other one that you just mentioned?
Manic Street Preachers.
Just before that?
Idlewild. Fatboy Slim.
Fatboy Slim, yeah, again.
It feels very 90s.
I could totally say that's 20, but see, Hope is Important.
No,
that just like kicks me in the side. And
there's also REM Up, Madonna, Ray of Light, defend. That's a good album. Right, and here's a link earlier to, I read today that apparently on, what's a... the song Massive Attack, love is a teardrop. Madonna was gonna do vocals for that.
Oh, really?
But instead she did a cover with Massive Attack and it was Elizabeth from the Cocteau Twins who did the vocals for it.
I would find it hard to, I don't think it would be as kind of ethereal
with Madonna.
I agree.
Madonna did it, she would overdo it.
I agree. Also an underappreciated album, Catatonia, International Velvet.
Classic album.
Good album.
Wait, would that not mean the Cardigans?
What?
The Cardigans album with Favourite Game? Was that not around about the same time?
I think
time?
That was a year earlier.
Was that?
I might be wrong. It's not on this list. Elliot Smith, that's already been on. Jeff Buckley, but it's a sketchy one. It's not really a full album. Whole Celebrity Skin.
Was that 98?
Apparently.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was earlier.
Another one, Uncle, Science Fiction.
Science Fiction, 20-year-old.
Yeah.
Oh my
Ash,
God.
Nuclear Sounds.
Yeah. Oh, but again, I can see that being 20-year-old. It's funny because like Hope is Important is totally a high school album, as is Ash and Nuclear Sounds. But I don't put like I don't know. I think maybe
you still
because
feel like you left school last year.
I think because I've not listened to Nuclear Sounds for such a long time, but Hope is Important, something that's always in my playlist.
Just a few more here. Sonic Youth, A Thousand Leaves.
Nope.
I've already said Ash. This is one of my favourite albums. I didn't start listening to this probably about 2005. Godspeed You Black Emperor, fucking amazing. Fugazi End Hits, Gomez Bring It On.
Bring it on. That was
I listened to that so
at
much
at the start of this year when I was in Glasgow at Celtic Connections. There was a poster up and it that I had that moment of going fuck off because it was they were on tour playing Bring It On for its 20th anniversary, and it only feels like yesterday that I was at Inverary Castle in 2008 when they were when they played Bring It on the second stage as part of the 10th anniversary, and it was just like, fuck off. But,
back when happened. Gomez were good before they started to sound like music from BBC One.
and then, the first two albums were great. Yeah, and then after that,
I would say their first three albums.
Yeah. Dave Rogers, big Gomez fan.
I love Gomez. Mm. Love them.
I'll say the best for last. No, it's not Robbie Williams, I've been expecting you. It's Garbage Version 2.0.
Actually,
yeah.
Like, yeah. Again, an album which. I think I've told this story possibly before in the podcast, but I remember at the time being on a school trip to the Contemporary Arts Museum in Edinburgh and going round, and we'd been doing like sketches of paintings and stuff like for portfolios and whatnot, and at that time, it was me and one of the other guys that was in my class, and we sat with some headphones and massive into Garbage at that point in time. Like, they were shit hot, the best thing. Shirley Manson, oh, you know, the whole shebang, Crushies and
I was massively into him as well.
Yeah. Sitting, Salvador Dali.
Salvador Dali was there.
No, Salvador Dali exhibition. Sitting, quite the thing, listening to Garbage, and who walks in front of us?
Shirley Manson, really?
And Butch Vig.
Oh,
I shit myself. I've still got a sketchbook upstairs which is signed by them because there was no way I wasn't.
Did you speak to them? Oh, yeah. I was just to say, teenage cutch just watched her walk by, was too afraid to say hello.
No, we were just like... Oh, whoa. You were listening. Was you?
Listeners, you've heard Kutch fangirling over Scottish trad bands the other week. It's pretty much like that.
Imagine a Scottish like rock indie band from the 90s. Yeah.
Holy shit.
That's a good story.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. But yeah, that was amazing. Garbage. Well, so I've got one more for you, and it's not music, and it's not quite 20-year-old. But
so it doesn't fit at all.
It does fit into the how fucking old are we,
right?
Is it a classic photo?
No,
are we gonna do a 20? Oh my god, photo montage this week needs to be photos of us
from when we were so we watched The World's End the other night. Edgar Wright film with Simon Pegg, Nick Frost. And it got us kind of talking about, you know, obviously Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and...
Better films.
And
Can I just say, I thought that The World's End was an inappropriate name for a film, at least, because to me The World's End pub, because it's a pub with murders, and I just assumed it was a film about, I thought it was really inappropriate and they'd made a comedy film about The World's End murders.
There's other pubs called The World's End outside Edinburgh.
Yeah, well, I was about 6 months before I realised it wasn't a comedy based on The World's End murders. Anyway,
it got us sort of talking about Spaced, the thing where Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost came from. And having just had a glance at it, that started 24th of September, 1999.
Yep.
It's 19 years. Spaced is 19 years old.
I remember watching it in my room on the TV me and my little brother got between us like the year before for Christmas.
Yeah.
And where we used to, because we used to pretend to be asleep. And then, like, I just remember my little brother going, Jimmy, is it time yet? I'd be like, no, shut up, though, we're awake. And then we'd wake up to watch, like, Brass Eye or Spaced you know, things like that.
But it's,
would have been a little bit older when Space came around, actually, but Brass Eye definitely
was. It's one of these things where Space was one of those programs that was cool and funny because it was about folk that were that bit older than you.
They'd
been to university and you're sort of like on the on the precipice of heading that way, and it was that you know, that look at sort of I suppose, potential future life, but with this comedic slant, and it was very in with video games and the references, and you know, it was pop culture was the base of that show as well, and it was just absolutely everything that you know was me at the time, really.
Yeah.
And then fast forward, what, 5 years, 3, 4, 5 years, and I remember finding it on DVD and bringing it to the flat in Dundee, and we all sat and watched it, and it felt relevant at that point because we were at that sort of age and you know that point in our lives, and we've watched it probably at least once a year ever since. It's one of those series which is like Black Books and Father Ted, you know, it's so good, so funny, and it does sort of, you relate to it, but as time goes on, I actually relate to it less and less because of...
Yeah, getting older.
Older.
Yeah.
And then to see that it's now 19-year-old. Fuck! Like... yeah. And, you know, obviously these guys have now gone on and done massive things. You know, Simon Pegg's basically a Scientologist now.
No, he's just big in Hollywood. He's taking because he does work with Tom Cruise a lot.
Tom Cruise,
on Mission Impossible. Yeah, yeah. He's like he's a tech guy in Mission Impossible.
In every Mission Impossible film since the third one, I think.
Yeah,
has it been more than? I didn't.
There's like seven films now.
Yeah.
Just, I can't contribute to episodes when we talk about films because I know fuck all about films.
He's Scotty in Star Trek as well.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know he was in Star Trek.
And he wrote the last Star Trek film, which was good for half an hour.
More than one Star Trek film.
But
yeah, that was one of my oh holy fuck how old am I moments. Recently,
it's like, gonna keep happening. This is the thing. Every year, like between now and when we die, basically, we're constantly like, "Oh my god, I can't believe I'm that old."
The thing is in 20 years' time, when we resurface this podcast and go, "Holy fuck," we were worried then.
Well, it's fine though, because society will collapse by then, and there won't be any electricity for us to play podcasts back on. The internet will be done because we've.
Well, that's why I'm buying records now.
Generating power.
That's why I'm buying records again, because you can hand crank a record.
Yeah, hand crank. As long as you've got a hand crank on it, you'll be fine.
As long as I've got music, I'll be fine.
We'll all come into your house and listen to your records, which is fine.
Five Club coming on LP.
It's got to do it for the archival. Properties. Yeah, it's probably the only thing that'll last, although it'll melt in a...
Not fucking CDs.
No, not CDs. Shit. Definitely not fucking USB sticks.
No.
Was it they reckon there's enough power in them to last about 5-6 years?
Yeah.
Without ever being plugged in?
Fucking shit. Formats are shit.
Yeah, digital formats.
We should go back to cuneiform text like the Babylonians. Just lines and clay. Fucking. That stuff was buried.
Exactly.
5,000 years ago, and it's still fucking fine.
Yeah.
Still legible. Yep.
Yeah. Ah, but we'll stick it on a plastic disc.
Oh well. Should I save the socials?
Yeah, probably give us some socials.
Oh god, we didn't do that at the start, did we?
Yeah. Please talk to us on facebook.com/fiveclubpod or at fiveclub, Twitter at fiveclub, email ken@fiveclub.co.uk, website www.fiveclub.co.uk, buy our merch, it's awesome, or Instagram fiveclub. And do email us with stupid questions if you want, or ideas for fight clubs, or anything like that, and we will talk about them.
Email us, tweet us, Facebook us, whatever you can. Just talk to us. Don't come up to us. We're all quite antisocial.
And any fan of this podcast has to be a weirdo. Let's be real here. Let's be real.
I don't want stabbed. Thanks. But on that note as well, we've been invited back to the Fife Whiskey Festival this year.
Can't believe you've been invited back.
Kutch didn't fall asleep. No, he didn't fall asleep. He didn't get told to stop drinking at that one. That was at the Edinburgh Whiskey Fringe.
Completely disgraced yourselves.
Well, that's because I wasn't working that one.
Yeah.
So I didn't have the microphone and the chat on the go. I was just drinking.
We hit that far too hard. Every table we went to is like, I'd like to take you on a journey for our entire age. And we got to like, that sounds fantastic.
But, yeah, it was still that sort of plan of let's try that one because we've not had that one. Yeah, let's do that. And then we would try that and they would go, so have you tried this one? And the next thing you know, you've done 7 whiskies in the space of like, what, 8 minutes.
But it's great that Fife Whiskey Fest is happening again. And I had no doubt it would after a first year. It's so successful. And it's great because it's got a couple of big players there, but it's more so like up and comers and smaller breweries and independent bottlers, which is where a lot of, you know, for the fans,
stuff has happened.
For whiskey geeks like us is where, a lot of interest and stuff. And stuff you might not try otherwise.
Yeah.
And then you're like, holy shit, there's a lot of really good blends and independent bottlings out there.
And you know the other thing? I mean, from both those festivals that we've been to recently, the whiskey ones, they're just so willing to chat.
Yeah.
And you know what was interesting, though? I found that the younger distilleries were so much more willing to chat about their strategies and everything as well.
Yeah, like Arran and Glenturret were much more... Well, Glenturret's not new, but you know what I mean? Like
Lindor's and
they're
King's
sort of
Barnes
starting
and,
again doing single malts and stuff.
Lindor's and King's Barnes from Fife, you know, they were really open to actually just having a really good chat about the industry as well. So, which, you know, for geeks like us, for if you're going to a whiskey fest, you're doing it because you like whiskey. You also, I reckon a lot of people are there because they're interested in it as well.
Yeah, and they want to know the future of the industry and what it's going to be like. And,
exactly. Yeah. So anyway, we're going to be there. So that's March.
I can't remember the first week of March.
It's 9th, 10th, something like that. I need to check the dates again.
God, we're great at plugging things.
This is a great plug. Look, fifewhiskeyfestival.com. Put it in Google. Check it out. It's £25.
Yes, they are. Yes.
Early bird tickets, £25. And again, the bang for your buck you will get out of that.
You don't have to do the Fife Whiskey Fest challenge.
Oh no!
Get your money's worth.
Oh no!
Oh no! You get your money's worth most definitely. And especially
and everything's
at
25. So nice.
And I think the full price is only £35 anyway.
Yeah.
It's not like it's...
But I'd get them quick.
Yeah.
Because they're doing an extra day this year?
No. So
or an extra
what
session?
What it is that they've got the 2 sessions like they did last year, but the night before, they're having a meal at Lindor's. And it's a dinner and a whiskey tasting, and I think it's about £70 a head. So that's also something, but we're not going to that.
I'll be offered free tickets for that. Yes! As you can tell from our podcast, we're great conversationalists. Excellent hosts. Your very exclusive dinner.
Yeah. But anyway, if you're interested in that, or if you're coming along to that, just remember we'll be there. Come talk to us. Because I think last year we talked to a lot of the guys, you know, the stalls, and talked about the whiskey and whatnot. If you've not heard that episode, go back, find it. It's there. It's good. But I think this year we'll maybe do a bit more of that, but also maybe try and talk to some of the folk
punters
about
and see
what people are thinking, how they, if they've been before, what they think about it, why, you know, why should more people come to Fife to do the Whiskey Fest? And hopefully, I think there's small plans afoot that we might try and get some chat from the distilleries themselves and maybe go visit them. But that's still something that's a sort of work in progress.
You need to do
basically
that.
The logistics are too difficult because nobody wants to drive there.
That is very true.
Speaking about it for ages, like I'm not, as podcast listeners will know, I fucking hate whiskey. It smells and tastes like disinfectant. I don't participate in this side of the activities. But you've been talking about going on a tour for ages and nobody will offer to drive and you can't get to by public transport. And that's the sticking point.
We just have to decide on walking. That's probably it.
Should ask silent producer Christy really nice to drive you around.
Yeah, it is just a pity they're all on the fucking east coast of Fife.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's something that's as I say, possibly in the works. But we'll definitely be at the Whiskey Fest, so come check it out. Cool. So yeah, I think really it comes to that time of the evening where I have to ask Mags.
I have one tonight.
What is the motto?
I have a motto. I'm going to leave you in the wise words of godlike hero Roddy Wimble. I laugh at your conversational skills, or lack.
Earn lack of with his American accent.
You talk too much when you talk too much, and when I argue, sit there and makes me laugh.
I laugh at your conversational skills. Our lack of.
Good night.
Night.
Yes, it will be.
Can it cope?
It can. If necessary, I can turn things down.
Yay!
Like you. Right.
If you just turn the high pitch down, Max just won't come through at all.
Tempo down.
No bass notes at all to my voice.
No. Nope, tempo down, bass up.
Just give us. What's that in the background?
15 minutes of. So I was just having a wee read of some more of the reviews, ones that I've missed. So settle in. I'm just going to read a few to you. Dangerous recipes. I tried the crab recipe and 12 people got sick and one is still in hospital. Please be careful.
It's got nothing to do with the recipe. Let's use the fisty crab.
It'll give you the skewer.
Skewer?
Would have given it zero, still got the skitter a week after trying the crab.
Is it any serious?
And no, get it. Got bad week fit.
Got bad week fit.
So it's like wow. They've actually decided to go in and start attacking the crab recipe. It's just tried the crab recipe. 12 people got sick and one's still in hospital. Just like, whoa. It really is. Oh.
It's just the last thing in it. There's a Brazilian fighter, Vitor Belfort, who always used to say, "I want to fight Jesus." But it sounds like he's saying Cheez-Its. Like crisp. "I want to fight Cheez-Its."
Why does he not like Jesus? Or does he like Jesus?
No, he loves you. He's just Brazilian. No, he says, oh, he's saying, "I want to thank."
Yeah.
Oh, I want to
thank Cheez-Its. And then a Cuban guy won, who's fucking amazing. And it was just after the gay marriage thing was passed in the States. And he got on the mic, he went, "People, no. No for gay. No for gay Jesus." And everybody's like, is he saying no for gay Jesus? Well, like, but apparently he does have, apparently afterwards his manager's like, "What the fuck were you doing?" He is a total Christian, but he's like, "What? I'm so sorry, I didn't. I say no for gay." It's like, no forget Jesus. He's just going, "No for gay Jesus. No for gay Jesus." And it's really funny. Everyone's like, MMA is constantly unintentionally hilarious. It's so funny.